From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump has demanded that the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone in Seattle, Washington, be cleared away by local and state authorities. The area, dubbed CHAZ, is a multi-block region of the city that was taken over by those protesting police brutality after Seattle police abandoned their precinct building. The occupied space is functioning as a unique community with an altar to those who have been killed by police, free food distribution, poetry readings, and more. Meanwhile, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, who pushed back at Trump's demand to crack down on the CHAZ, saying, "Go back to your bunker," is facing her own set of problems. City Council member Kshama Sawant has called on Durkan to resign over her handling of police violence against protesters. We turn now to Kshama. She is a member of the City Council and the first socialist to be elected to that body. She's with the Socialist Alternative Party. She's led the fight to hold Amazon accountable. And earlier in the week, she attended the City Council meeting calling for Durkan's resignation. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So first, before we go to what the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone is, give us a sense of how Seattle has responded to police brutality, in particular, been part of the national uprising that we have seen springing up after George Floyd was killed by police in Minneapolis.
That's right, Sonali, and you used the correct word for what's happening right now. This is historic, what's going on nationwide, and indeed, globally, this is an uprising, a rebellion of an entire generation of young people led by Black and Brown community members. But really, this is a multiracial fight back. It's a rejection of the brutal racism and police violence, especially targeting Black and Brown community members. The fact that the police departments in city after city after city have murdered Black and Brown community members with complete impunity, with no police officer being brought to justice. And so young people are pushing back against this kind of police violence, but also this is a broader fight against racism and the kind of system that's on offer, capitalism, where, you know, where clearly the vast majority of working class people don't reap the benefits of the tremendous amount of labor that they provide. And that's why there is a real potential in this movement to win key reforms related to police brutality. And at the same time, this movement also is providing and should continue to provide a vision for a different kind of society entirely.
So we had police cracking down on protesters in Seattle in the same way that we've seen in Minneapolis, in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles. There was in one particular incident that stood out where a man who was armed with a gun drove into a protest amidst a crowd, shot a protester who leaned into the car, and then walked around the crowd waving his gun, seemingly without being challenged by police. He was arrested later. Did that incident represent the low point of what took place in Seattle over the past few weeks?
You know, there's been so much violence, just horrific violence from the police department here that I'm hard-pressed to figure out which is the lowest point. Hmm. But the incident that you're mentioning, I was there at the standoff on Capitol Hill with hundreds of community activists there. And it happened while I was there. And, you hit on a very important point, which is that, our society and working people in our society are told that we need the police force because the police are needed to stem violence and crime. But here we saw this playing out in front of our eyes where you had hundreds of peaceful protesters alongside, with me alongside them, with no arms at all. We're faced with these police lines of, there were many, many police officers joined by the National Guard, all of them armed to the hilt, wearing face shields, body shields, pads on their shoulders, arms, scarves, shins, carrying tear gas canisters, mace spray, and rubber bullets and rifles, absolutely armed to the teeth. And this guy shoots at a black man there, and the police do nothing. And a few hours later, their violence was targeted at the peaceful protest movement. And we were all, you know, we were standing there having a political conversation. The next thing you know, the mace hits us, and then the tear gas hits us. And a few minutes after that, it looked like, as I said before, like a war zone in the middle of, you know, the urban core of our city. And you mentioned that Jenny Durkin, the Democratic Party establishment mayor in this city, and that I've called for her resignation. The fact is that I have joined the community who were already calling for her resignation.
I see.
Tens of thousands of ordinary people have signed a petition by this point, and it was following them that Saturday morning on the 6th of June, I issued a press release saying that I'm also calling for Jenny Durkin to resign. And I think the main point here that we have to understand is that it's not that the police were required to respond to the protest and then somehow it got out of hand. No, there was no need, there was nothing to respond to, because it has been a 100% peaceful protest movement. And I've been at many of these rallies starting from May 30th when the first protest happened in Seattle. And in fact, what it has been is an intentional targeting of violence against peaceful protest movement with the intention of quashing this movement. And that's the predominant role that the police forces play in the state under capitalism. And that is, of course, coming on top of the fact, as I mentioned, that black and brown people have been murdered, literally murdered by the police with impunity. And just to give you some numbers related to Seattle, under Jenny Durkin's watch, under Democrat Jenny Durkin's watch, 8 black and brown community members have been murdered by the police. Not a single police officer has been prosecuted. And since 2011, 30 people, black and brown people, have been murdered by Seattle police. No police officer being brought to justice. That's the context in which this uprising has happened. And regardless of ebbs and flows, I think this has been a decisive shift in our society, with the labor movement also joining the movement. And in Seattle, I can tell you that the Seattle Police Officers Guild, which is unfortunately part of our local AFL-CIO, you know, local labor movement, labor council, but the Seattle Police Officers Guild is an extremely reactionary force, and it is affiliated with the Fraternal Order of Police, which is very reactionary and strongly supportive of the Trump agenda. The rank and file of the labor movement here is demanding that the Police Officers Guild be removed from our labor council, because there is no place in the labor movement for brutality against black and brown people. Our movement is based on the idea that an injury to one is an injury to all.
Tell me about the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. This is something that has irked Trump to no end. He has demanded that the state and the city come in. And, you know, if he had his way, there would be military tanks rolling in, tear gassing everyone, running them over on day one of this interesting space that is being held. Reminds me a little bit of some of the Occupy Wall Street style protests. But give me a sense of what it's like to walk through this space, because, you know, all we hear from Trump and the right-wing media is Antifa, Antifa.
Yeah, and by the way, can I just say Antifa, if you take the literal meaning of Antifa, is anti-fascist.
Yeah.
Absolutely, as a socialist, I'm anti-fascist. Most progressive people, whether they identify as liberals or socialists, are anti-fascist. And so this is fear-mongering by the Trump administration and by the right wing. But I just wanted to start by saying, I absolutely agree. This is very reminiscent of the Occupy movement. And I was very active in the Occupy movement in Seattle in 2011. I don't know if a day went by when I was not at the occupation. And this is bringing back some of those memories. And I think those, some of the political lessons we learned also have to be used in order to bring this movement to some successes. But as far as the Donald Trump tweet about threatening to bring in the military into Seattle, and the fact that he's irked by the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, I think, you know, firstly, I would say we cannot take that lightly, because he's a dangerous reactionary. His administration is extremely right-wing. And we absolutely have to push back with all our might against this horrendous idea that the military would be brought into Seattle to inflict more violence and unspeakable violence on ordinary people in our city, not to mention our communities of color. But at the same time, we have to recognize that when Donald Trump tweets about something and he's irked about something, the movement is succeeding because this is getting under the skin of the right-wing agenda of Donald Trump. He is a coward. Donald Trump is a coward. And this tweet represents that he is threatened by, and the right wing and Fox News and everyone who goes with that is threatened by the courage of this movement. And I mean, I can bear personal testimony to the courage that this movement has shown. For 8 nights, the young protesters were facing tear gas, rubber bullets, and mace. The medic tent at that zone, before the victory was achieved on Monday, was being attacked on a regular basis by the police. And as I said, this horrific violence stands at the doorstep of the Democratic establishment, Mayor Durkin. But what stands out here is the incredible courage of the young protesters. And it shows, it's a glimpse of what is possible if our movements are determined, are courageous, and also operate in solidarity. I mean, one of the points that was being made over and over again by the protesters, I mean, I had dozens of conversations with many of the activists there, not only on Sunday night when we got tear gassed, but the night after that. And then on Tuesday, we did a 2,000 strong rally at the same site. And then we took the movement to City Hall. And I opened the doors of City Hall as an elected representative of working people. I opened the doors of City Hall for the thousands of people to come in. And we said, you know, who's City Hall? Our City Hall. And we are going to fight for our lives and for our needs. But in many of the conversations that I had there, it was clear that people understood that the best way and really the only way to win real change, a social change, away from a racist and police violent society, is to actually build solidarity between, you know, across the races, among the working class, so that we understand that we together have a stake, whether you're black or white, you have a stake in fighting against oppression. Whether, regardless of your gender, you have a stake in fighting against sexual violence, because the only basis on which we can have a decent society is if we fight together against all oppression. That is our obligation. So it's our obligation to stand with black and brown people against police violence and as part of this protest movement. And I feel truly inspired by what is happening. I mean, obviously nothing is guaranteed. We absolutely have to build our movement with clear ideas and, you know, really debate out our strategy. But I'll tell you one thing is guaranteed. If we don't build these movements, then we will continue to have the status quo of racism and violence. But we also have to be clear about who's on our side and who's not. Now, the Democrats who have overseen police murder and violence in cities like Seattle and Minneapolis are now posturing. You know, we have to be careful to guard against attempts by the establishment, the same establishment that got us here in the first place, attempts by them to co-opt our movement. And we are going to see politician after politician saying Black Lives Matter and then doing nothing to actually bring forward the demands of the movement. And through my socialist office, we are showing a different example where we are actually bringing the demands of the community forward. And on Monday, on June 15th, we will be, the city council will be voting on two bills that I have brought forward. One of those is to ban the use and purchase by Seattle police of all chemical weapons and so-called crowd control weapons. And another bill is to ban chokeholds. And we have to demand, our movement has to demand that all the Democrats vote yes on it so that we can actually move forward in making real change in our society.
And the chokeholds issue is, you would imagine, the bare minimum. There was a poll by Reuters Ipsos that showed that more than 80% of Americans nationwide believe that chokeholds should be banned by police departments. Even just saying it seems like such a bizarre thing that this should be a no-brainer. What about this precinct building, by the way? It was when the police abandoned the precinct building that protesters took over and created this autonomous zone. Now it seems as though the police is interested in reclaiming the building. I understand that the police chief toured the area. She is suggesting that it was a mistake for the police to abandon the building. What would be your vision for what that building could be turned into?
You're absolutely right. Actually, the police chief, who has also overseen this violence, and you know, it's under her direction and the mayor's direction that this violence has happened, the police chief has doubled down on her false allegations that this movement, which was completely unarmed, all we had was our umbrellas, our cell phones, and our solidarity. That's what we had. And we faced up against a police force that was armed to the teeth. And yet she claims that somehow there were projectiles thrown and there some police officers were hurt. I mean, there is no truth to any of these lies, but it's absolutely true that we have to be sober, that we have to build on this victory, because if we just rest on this victory, then the police department, the reactionary forces, but also aided by the establishment in this city, the big business-backed political establishment in this city, will make every attempt to take this East Precinct back. And I think, you know, first of all, this is such a battleground, but it's a key victory, because East Precinct, which is on Capitol Hill, and Capitol Hill, which is part of my district, is in the urban core of Seattle. I mean, this is an emblematic sort of corner of our city. It is in the center of the city, and
East I understand Precinct it's been gentrified quite a bit.
Oh, massively, massively. Capitol Hill and the district that is in this, to the south of it, where I live, in my district, the Central District, the Capitol Hill and the Central District have been the epicenters of just horrific gentrification. And that's a very important point related to racism and the question of Black lives and Black living standards, because over the last decade, there's been an exodus of Black and brown working families and poor people from Capitol Hill and the Central District, because the rents have skyrocketed and it's been transformed just in the last 5-10 years. And that's why this is so important, that we were able to defeat the police and drive them out of there. But it's not going to be permanent until we make it permanent. That is why we are demanding that what used to be, you know, this was a jewel in the crown of the police department. This was a flagship police station for them. It's so crucial that this is not in police hands, but we have to make it permanent. And that's why we are demanding that East Precinct be permanently converted into a community center. And what I'm doing through my office is bringing legislation to enable that conversion and, you know, allocate funds for that. But what it will be has to be a vision that is shaped by community members themselves. So I'm inviting various community organizations for a discussion. And these are community organizations that have a proven track record of fighting against racism, fighting against gentrification, and really advocating for an end to police repression, and also for housing affordability, the need for social housing. And that's why, as you mentioned before, you know, we it's very important that we also win the Amazon tax alongside our demands for the East Precinct and the ban on chemical weapons, because the tax on big business will make available hundreds of millions of dollars to immediately have a massive expansion of social housing, which is permanently affordable, publicly owned social housing, which will disproportionately benefit our Black and brown families, who are the ones who are disproportionately negatively impacted by gentrification and homelessness.
So this issue of Amazon is so critically important, because of course so many Amazon workers who are Black and brown are, you know, on the front lines of the COVID pandemic. Jeff Bezos, the world's largest man, who may in the next few years become the world's first trillionaire, has fought tooth and nail against the head tax that you had pushed for, one, and then that was basically rescinded by the city council. Even the money that he has spent on fighting that could have provided the raises that people needed. So it seems as though you are bringing up a broader framework, a systemic framework around looking at Black Lives Matter that may not be, you know, part of the links that are being made. But if you see the movement for Black Lives and other analyses of Black Lives Matter, which has, of course, been around for at least 6 years, they do draw the links between police violence and wealth inequality, right?
absolutely. That's a very important point you're making. And the movement for Black Lives has been drawing that link between police repression, violence, and brutality, and the economic injustice that the communities of color face and the broader working class faces. And in fact, even here in the, you know, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, the group of young people that is working on this, they have brought forward their own series of demands. And I'm not suggesting that everybody agrees on everything. You know, there's a healthy debate going on in the movement, and I think that's extremely important. We should not be talking in an echo chamber. We should be willing to discuss and debate ideas and bring the best ideas forward. But even in that, you know, in that context, just in the context of the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, one of the points they have made in their manifestos is the need for rent control, which is connecting the question of police brutality against Black and brown people and the gentrification that Black and brown people face. So I think these connections are being made by community members, by the young activists, many of whom are probably in their teens, and this is the first political movement that they've been involved in, and they're already making those connections. And you know, as I've often quoted, Malcolm X said correctly that you can't have capitalism without racism, meaning the oppressions that we see under capitalism, which are horrific oppressions, they are written in the DNA of capitalism, because a system that is based on a concept of deep inequality, such as capitalism, will always need a police state to quash social movements, to keep, you know, all the people who are oppressed in check. And the best way to keep oppressed people in check is to keep them at different levels of oppression and divide them along the lines of race, gender, and you know, sexual orientation, you name it. And that's why the message of working class multiracial working class solidarity is so crucial. And that means that we absolutely fight for and win, especially at this moment, fight for and win the kind of demands that are coming forward related to police violence. So it's, for example, the ones I'm bringing forward on Monday, June 15th, for banning chemical weapons and crowd control weapons, banning chokeholds. All of this, you know, we discussed, these are very important. We need to take East Precinct permanently away from the police and bring it to the hands of the community. We're also calling for an independently elected community oversight board with full powers over the police, meaning hiring, firing, subpoena powers, bringing police officers to justice who have committed murders. But connecting all of this to the questions of economic injustice and capitalism itself. And so taxing big business to provide social housing is going to be hard to win, because we have to fight against the establishment. As you said, Amazon and the establishment have fought against us tooth and nail. So it will be hard to win that. But it will be harder still to dismantle capitalism itself. But that is a conversation the movement needs to have, because not only are we facing such historic oppression in our society and the impoverishment that the hundreds of millions of Americans are going to face in this recession. I mean, just to put a number on it, already over 40 million Americans have said that they are filing for unemployment. It is going to be absolutely devastating, historic devastation of our communities of color and of the broader working class. CNBC just had an article published which was titled "The Housing Apocalypse is Coming." And in that article, they say there's going to be a tsunami of evictions of renters once the eviction moratoriums are lifted throughout the country. And who do you think is going to be affected disproportionately? It's going to be Black and brown families. Here in Seattle, even before the pandemic recession, we have dire statistics that show that there is an epidemic of evictions, and it is Black women-led households of poor and working class families that are the most affected by evictions. So that's going to only increase by orders of magnitude in this recession. So we have to unite working class people against the billionaire class and demand that billionaires pay for this crisis, not working people. Let's not forget what happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. The Black and brown neighborhoods in Hurricane in Louisiana were completely devastated by the hurricane. But on top of that, the neoliberal agenda that was carried out destroyed their housing. It destroyed the public school system. That has never gotten back. That has never come back. So we have to remember, you know, from those lessons and really fight to put the burden of this recession on the billionaire class, not on ordinary people.
I want to thank you so much, Shama, for joining us today. We'll keep our eye on how things play out in Seattle. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you. Likewise, thank you so much.
My guest has been Shama Sawant. She's a member of Seattle's City Council with the Socialist Alternative Party. She's led the fight to hold Amazon accountable and has joined the protesters' call for Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan to resign. We've been discussing how protests have been unfolding in Seattle, as well as the formation of the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.